Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Charlie Cook of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have bad, bad, and crazy martinis for you today. We searched high and low for a strong, good martini, and, well, better luck on Monday, I guess. Let's start with bad martini number one, Charlie, and one of the big frustrations for Americans that was uncovered in recent weeks, and of course, the president tried to tamp it down, was the NSA scandal, revealed in large part by Edward Snowden and Glenn Greenwald. The president said, don't worry about this. Yes, we're collecting this information, but we don't look at it unless we have a good reason to, and there are lots of safeguards in place to make sure that the system's not abused. Well, Washington Post, front page story Friday. The National Security Agency has broken privacy rules or overstepped its legal authority thousands of times each year since Congress granted the agency broad new powers in 2008, according to an internal audit and other top secret documents. Most of the infractions involve unauthorized surveillance of Americans or foreign intelligence targets in the United States, both of which are restricted by statute and executive order. According to the audit obtained by the Post, dated May 2012, the Post reports 2,776 incidents in the preceding 12 months of unauthorized collection, storage, access to, or distribution of legally protected communications. The causes and severity of NSA infractions vary widely, according to the Post. 1 in 10 is attributed to a typo in which an analyst enters an incorrect query and retrieves data about U.S. phone calls or emails. But the most serious lapses include unauthorized access to intercepted communications, the distribution of protected content, and the use of automated systems without built-in safeguards to prevent unlawful surveillance. So it sounds like Snowden was right when he told, or actually it was Greenwald who told ABC News that it's not that hard for the NSA to get into your stuff.
No, and I think probably the key to this is that the excuses or rationalizations to which we've been repeatedly subjected are not comforting in the way that those who put them out think they are. The first one is that the intrusions in this case are the product of mistakes. Well, perhaps so, but the objection is that there is a vast surveillance state which can be mistakenly used. Not the people who are using it are necessarily in the Gestapo. As regards the president, again, the left is saying he didn't lie. Well, if he didn't lie, then he's one of two things. He's either totally out of touch with what is going on to a worrying degree, or he has terrible judgment as to what constitutes spying, and his instincts as to the liberties that we should enjoy are unfit. So the revelations of the last year and the way they've been batted away should be worrying to everyone. In some regards, the left is reaping what they've sowed. The use of executive power and spying in quite this way is obviously something that started during the Bush administration. Obama didn't invent it. But the left is insisting that what we really need to do now is make sure the president is reined in and have some sort of congressional oversight and remind the White House. And this is, of course, if they criticize him at all. But those who do criticize him say that we need to remind the White House what it should and shouldn't be doing. And I would say that the way in which the president has been indulged domestically in overstepping his bounds, unilaterally delaying Obamacare, unilaterally passing some sort of dream act through the executive branch, this new plan that he has, the Connect Ed plan, by which he plans to ask the FCC to raise taxes on all phone users because he can't get it through Congress. The left has indulged this. We looked at this with the debt ceiling last time. If you remember all of that mint of platinum coin nonsense, that even Harry Reid was looking for ways to bypass the chamber, which he heads up. And then they're surprised when the one area where the president does actually have a legitimate claim in, which is foreign policy, he's riding roughshod over people's liberties. And they really can't have it both ways. And I think if I were a left-winger now and I were really worried about the security, I would start to say, hang on, we need to start telling the president, look, there are limits on you in all parts of governance.
On to the second martini now, and an excellent post at the corner at nationalreview.com by somebody named Charles Cook. And this is about the New York mayor's race, as well as one of the down-the-ballot races, I believe it's public advocate. And you're looking at the candidate's position on guns. Of course, Mayor Bloomberg has been pretty anti-Second Amendment, about as anti-Second Amendment as they come. He's even inserted himself into special congressional elections nowhere near New York City to push for the gun control candidate that he likes best. And so you talk about one of the mayoral candidates, Bill Thompson, who seems to be pretty competitive right now, as well as a public advocate candidate, Daniel Squadron, who have basically decided that despite the draconian process you have to go through to get a gun in New York City or New York State, that they're not satisfied with that, and they think you got to get rid of them altogether.
Well, this is the worrying thing about Bill Thompson, is that he appears to have looked at New York City, which has some of the strictest gun laws in the country, and it doesn't recognize the rules in the rest of New York. It accepts all of the restrictive rules that New York State imposes, but it doesn't recognize any of the liberties. It's a city in which it costs over $400 just to apply into the convoluted process that is applying for a gun permit that has effectively no concealed carry laws whatsoever, and in which the police can deprive you of your rights to bear arms almost on a whim. And he's looked at this city and said, well, I'm going to run in part on gun control. And there's a chilling phrase in there where he says we need to eliminate all gun use. And the especially, I suppose, vexing thing for conservatives or even, I suppose, moderates in New York is that Bill Thompson is really the most sane of the Democrats who have a chance of winning. The notion of looking at the city and deciding what it needs more gun control and being the most sane of the crowd is worrying in and of itself. And then you move on to Daniel Squadron. And I'm perplexed by this because, as we know, despite the protestations of the left, it is generally bad news for a candidate to start talking about gun control in the United States. It's not really a winning issue. And yet Squadron, who's running for public advocate, has cut a commercial with Chuck Schumer in which he totes his anti-gun bona fides, including his role in the SAFE Act, the crazy New York SAFE Act that for a while made it legal for police to carry their own sidearm. And Chuck Schumer waxes lyrical about this man and his campaign against guns over his career in the New York Senate. It's pretty depressing for me to live in a place in which two candidates who really don't have to talk about guns at all, especially given the way Bloomberg has treated them, think this will be electorally viable.
It makes me believe Kevin Williamson all the more. We were talking about one of Mayor Bloomberg's crazy efforts to regulate behavior. It was beyond the sodas. I don't know if it was the styrofoam or what else it was. But he says, despite all the craziness, we're really going to miss Mayor Bloomberg because every one of the people running for office to replace him is infinitely worse than him. And I think that's being borne out, unfortunately, so far in this campaign. All right. We've had enough of the bad martinis, although the third one probably could still be a bad martini. This is the crazy one. Bob Filner, the embattled mayor of San Diego, even Nancy Pelosi now saying that Filner needs to go, not necessarily because she thinks he really needs to go, but she doesn't want the Democratic Party to have to pay for a recall election to defend him. So the latest allegation here, and Gloria Allred has inserted herself into this big surprise, she's bringing forward a 67-year-old great-grandmother named Peggy Shannon, who works at the Senior Citizen Service Desk at San Diego City Hall. She alleges that Filner hugged her, kissed her on the lips, repeatedly asked her out, said lewd things to her as he was walking by. And even after his public apology, he walked by her desk unsolicited and just put his finger up to his lips and said, shh. And she took that to mean that he was trying to intimidate her not to come forward and tell what her experience with Filner was. So, Charlie, this story just gets worse and worse and worse. But hopefully there's some light at the end of the tunnel here when even folks like Pelosi say it's time for him to go.
I think there is. I think probably the most interesting element of this story is the way in which Filner has discussed his own behavior. And it makes sense for the media to draw a line between Filner and Anthony Weiner because they're similar stories. But Weiner has exhibited exactly the same pathology. And that is to present himself as if he were the only one who could possibly do the job. Whether that takes the form of promising that he'll return once he's been through rehab, as Filner did, or as Weiner did, and in fact Filner, I think, as well, repeatedly mentioning the middle class as if he's the only person who could fight, as they would say, for the middle class. This is a little bit odd, really, because the United States is a republic with an awful lot of democratic component. It's not a hereditary monarchy. If it were a hereditary monarchy, you would expect that sort of language. I'm sorry that I've let my public down. I have to go and fix myself, and then I'll be back in duty. But it's not as if Filner is the only one who can fill that role. There are hundreds of thousands of people who can fill that role and would probably do a better job and a more appropriate job than he is. And similarly, in New York City, there are 8 million people who live in New York City. It's not as if Anthony Weiner is the only person who can become the mayor. We have to move forward. We can't go backwards. I need to fight for the middle class. I need to fight for honest, hardworking Americans. But I'm afraid you don't get to say that or do that when you're embroiled in a scandal of your own making. And there are few scandals that are more of their own making than this Filner guy, who's now reached, what, 15 women? I mean, what is the point at which the Democratic Party writ large is going to say, look, you've got to go? Is it 20, 25, 30, 50? I mean, it would strike me that one woman would be too many, let alone 15.
Yeah. Well, we're starting to see where the standard really is. And unfortunately, it's still more about the political fallout than the ethical behavior. But I have a feeling Filner's not going to serve out this term.
And that's why they didn't call it at the beginning. If you now look back at the story that has come out, the Democratic Party recognized, and I'm not saying this is politicians in general. This is not something that is unique to the Democratic Party, although the hypocrisy of their war on women rhetoric is being exposed. They were very concerned back when Filner was running that they would lose the one chance they had at San Diego, which is still a relatively conservative city, especially by Californian standards. They were so worried about that that they ignored the three people who came forward and said he was a bad egg. So, you know, they knew. They also knew that during his 20 years in Congress, these rumors had been floating around. This is not new. But anyway, it's time for him to go now.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, it's time for us to go as well at the end of another good week. Charlie, thanks so much for filling in for Jim today. We appreciate it.
Great. Thank you very much.
Charlie Cook of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us today. Jim and I will be back here on Monday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Have a great weekend, everyone.